let's have the Task Force on Workplace Safety and Respect come to order. I thank everybody for joining us today. I know it's a little challenging with all our personal schedules, but and just a note, a representative, Jen Schultz, is going to join us by phone shortly, so she'll call in and you let me know when she calls in, or will we hear it? Okay. So last session in the Rules Committee, we passed a resolution in workplace safety and respect that directed the nonpartisan staff to implement items, including the resolution, report back, and offer any recommendations going forward. So we're here today to listen to the survey, discuss the findings, and then also to look hear their recommendations on what was indicated in the survey. So we'll be hearing from nonpartisan staff who will provide us with an overview of the House Community Survey findings and an update on the progress of the rest of the R17 resolution of workplace safety and respect, and then their recommendations on the House policy procedures against discrimination and harassment heading into the next session. So we're ready to go.
Okay.
So with that, I'll ask Mr. Ben Weeks and Ms. Christina Pera to join us from House Research. So if you would join us at the testifying table and then introduce yourselves for the record. And then you can just go right ahead when you're ready and proceed with the presentation. Members, you should also have the survey in your packets. So.
Good afternoon, Chair Keel and members. Ben Weeks from House Research.
Good afternoon, Chair and members. Christina Pera from House Research.
And Chair Keel, as he said, we're going to talk through the resolution on workplace safety and respect that was passed by the Rules Committee at the end of last session that required House Research to work with the task force on several different goals. One was the creation and conduct of a community survey about harassment and discrimination at the legislature, specifically at the House. We were also directed to create a dedicated phone and email reporting system for taking reports of harassment and discrimination at the House. We also were directed to create a dedicated webpage that gave the information about the phone and email reporting, and as well as having links to our policies. And then we were directed to think through training and make recommendations as to training for staff and members going forward. And finally, we were directed to review House rules, existing House rules and policies, and make any recommendations. And these all had a deadline of December 1st. On November 30th, in your packet, Christina and I, Ms. Pera and I, wrote a memo to the members of this work group, as well as Speaker Dowd and Speaker-elect Portman, laying out what we'd done, and we'll go through that today. And Ms. Pera is going to start by taking us through the survey that we created and put out.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Madam Chair and members, yeah. The community survey was administered in October of this year. And as Mr. Weeks said, it was in response to the resolution. So you all have the results of the survey, so I won't focus too much on the specific answers and questions. I'm going to talk a little bit more about how we developed it and what our thinking was. And what we've been thinking now is, as really how to use the survey in the future, unless you have specific any questions about the questions and the responses in the survey.
Okay, thank you.
So the survey was developed based on a review of other workplace surveys that are in use in both the public and private sector. We looked a lot, especially at a big evaluation that the Colorado legislature, they had a consultant do a survey and evaluation of their workplace. So we developed the survey. It was important to us that it be anonymous to try to get as many responses as we could. So we had about a 50% response rate from members and 72% from employees. And I'll note that one thing that was interesting is that most of the staff that responded did so within the first day. So we think there was a real desire to speak out, to respond to the survey there. I did highlight in the memo some key points and from the responses. The responses, I'll note, by the way, this document that you received, that was auto-generated by the software we use. We use SurveyPlanet. And so we do have the data, and we could maybe crunch that in other ways if there were some questions about, something more targeted than these charts that you have here. But as I said, we specifically chose that provider because everybody could respond anonymously, so we have no way to track who responded, who did not respond, or how any individual participant responded. In thinking about how to use the survey in the future, we would think about, things like what's the best time of year to administer the survey, for things like the response rate. One thing that's a challenge with the legislature is that we might have significant turnover every 2 years. And so going forward, if the survey were to be administered every 1 or 2 years, just that change in itself would affect the responses. But we think that this would at least give us a baseline to make some evaluations about progress in particular areas. The change in both the members and staff, I think, was another of the issues we tried to address in crafting the survey. So you'll notice that some of the questions are asked very open-ended questions. Have you ever witnessed something, or have you ever experienced harassment at the in the legislative workplace? And others were more targeted in terms of time, say, in the past 12 months. We were trying to capture the experiences of folks who have been here 30 or 40 years, as well as people who have been here a much shorter time. And so we tried to ask both types of questions to get a more accurate picture, or as complete a picture as we could, of people's experiences at the legislative workplace. And that actually is another issue, as I want to point out, is we phrase it broadly, meaning the legislative workplace. So because that's one thing that the policy tries to do, is to emphasize respect and professionalism throughout the legislature. But, of course, we have limited control over anything outside the House. So that's just some context to try to understand how we frame the questions and how people may have interpreted them. Another issue that the House could think of with respect to future surveys would be whether we would want to include other participants, such as lobbyists or the public or the Senate, the LCEC. That might present some logistical challenges, but it's something we could think about. And certainly if there's any feedback on questions that we asked or anything like that that could improve the response rate, or anything that could improve what we're trying to capture here. The survey did focus on harassment, sexual harassment, but we did also try to ask some broader questions about satisfaction with the culture in the House and relationships between members and employees. I would say that we did find very encouraging that almost everybody knew about the policy and how to make a report of harassment or discrimination under the policy.
Thank you, Ms. Parra. Mr. Weeks?
Sure. Thank you, Chair Keel. We can move on to the dedicated phone and email reporting. We set up a phone number, and it is 651-296-9896, and that is a line that goes to Ms. Parra and mine and Kelly Knight, the Director of House Human Resources, phones. It has a outgoing voicemail that explains what it is, and it's tagged. It's laid out in our signage and our webpage, as I'll explain in a minute. Then we have internally policies for how we respond to that. Basically, the three of us coordinate and have a document we keep online that talks about calls in, and then we're going to address those as they come in on a case-by-case basis. That's been live since December 1st. We also have a dedicated email address now for taking anonymous or semi-anonymous reports of discrimination or harassment, frankly, any report, and that's dh@house.mn, and that's also on our signage and on our webpage. The webpage itself is a link off the front page of the House's webpage, and I think I won't read the URL because it's a little bit long, but on the House's webpage under policies and procedures, there's a harassment and discrimination policies page. And when you pull that up, it has our email, our new email address, the dedicated phone line, as well as links to our current version of our policy against discrimination and harassment and our current list of supervisors and members to whom reports of discrimination or harassment can be made. And that document will likely change as the transition happens, but we'll keep that updated live on the website. And that was also live on December 1st. As part of that, we were also directed to make physical signs to supplement that. There should be a copy in your packet that looks like this. As you'll see from the sign, I am not a talented graphic designer, but I did my best to make it simple and clear. It lists our new web page. It lists that phone number I mentioned. It lists the email address. It points out that you can get the copies of the policy either online or you can go to the House Human Resources office on the first floor of the state office building and get a physical paper copy. And it just states the general goal that we, the House, seek to create a work environment free from harassment and discrimination. And with that, I think we'll turn to Ms. Para to talk a little bit about training, recommendations for training.
Thank you, Mr. Weeks. Ms. Para?
Thank you, Chair and members. So currently, House members receive training on harassment and discrimination when they are first elected to the House. And regular staff receive that training when they're first hired, and then every 5 years after. It's a little bit different for session-only staff and employee supervisors when they're first promoted. In 2018, all members were required to attend an all-day training with the morning session on implicit bias and the afternoon on harassment and discrimination. And we'll be doing that again in January of 2019. So in addition to those, we recommend that that five-year cycle for staff be changed to 2 years at least. We do have the capability for staff to do that this year. For everybody to have harassment discrimination training. And so for members to go at least every 2 year cycle on the harassment discrimination piece and then additional training, each biennium, things like implicit bias or bystander training, you know, that can be flexible depending on what seems necessary. And then additional training also for, House chairs, leadership, and members of the personnel committee on implicit bias, either every 1 or 2 years. Also additional training for employee supervisors on, again, some of those same topics, implicit bias, bystander training, but, you know, certainly specifically training on how to receive complaints and how to respond to those concerns when employees bring those to them. And then Mr. Weeks will go through the review of House rules and policies.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Weeks.
Thank you, Chair. We were directed to make recommendations for any changes to the House policy and procedures. We took a pretty conservative view of this, given that we just made last session significant changes to the House policy, and those really haven't had time to be fully tested yet. But one thing that Ms. Pera and I came up with, and it's just a practical matter, is I think we need language in the policy to deal with a situation where either the speaker or the minority leader is the person either alleging harassment or discrimination or is accused of harassment or discrimination. And that's just for the simple matter that they are the two people to whom we report in those instances, and they drive it. I don't have any particular concerns about the current speaker, the speaker-elect, but I think that would be a good addition to the policy. The other two, I guess you could call them recommendations, but the other two things to think about going forward in the policy came out of some thoughts given to us by our outside investigators in a past harassment investigation. And those two were, first, basically the concept of what constitutes legislative work or legislative business. When we drafted changes to the policy last year, and frankly since the policy's been in existence, it's had a concept of barring harassment and discrimination during legislative business, and that's not specifically defined in the policy. And so I think necessarily we've taken a pretty broad view of what that means. And so, you know, is a party event legislative business if it's attended by many legislators? Is a bonding trip, I suppose, would be, but what about when you're socializing after the bonding trip at the end of the tour? Things like that, it's a little unclear. There's always a tension in policies like this between specificity and flexibility, transparency and accessibility. So we don't want the policy to become overly legalistic, and we don't think it serves the House to avoid investigating things that happen just because they were on the margins of what we might consider legislative business. I think we'd rather take a more expansive view, and that's what testifiers at this subcommittee last year talked about. You know, we want to do everything, but it's something to think about going forward, is that that's a bit of an amorphous concept. And then the final recommendation thought is about, we don't define what constitutes unwelcome behavior, under the policy. It's a thorny subject. You can get pretty legalistic pretty fast talking about whether you do an objective or subjective tests, right? Is it enough that someone sincerely felt subjectively that conduct was unwelcome, or is it required that the person accused of that conduct would reasonably have known that that would be unwelcome? And does it have to be unwelcome to a reasonable person, a kind of an averaged out person, or does it matter that it's unwelcome to the specific person? And this is all left undefined in the policy. And again, there's a tension here between flexibility and specificity. I don't think we want to get overly legalistic, but it is an area where it could cause confusion and difficult decisions down the road. And I think that concludes our presentation. We're happy to stand for any questions anybody has.
I want to thank you both for being here. And members, do you have questions of our testifiers? Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Weeks, it's just a backgrounding question. On your award-winning graphic, as you refer to it, just curious, the telephone number, has that been previously assigned to any other office, personnel, division? And I'll just give you my rationale for that is, if it's somewhere still in legacy, somewhere in our system, is somebody going to get the wrong number and not know what to do with that number, or just inferred, or how do we deal with that?
Mr. Weeks.
Chair Keel, Representative O'Driscoll, it was a new clean number that they gave us. I'm not sure if it has been assigned before. I think my assumption was that it hasn't been, but I did not fully check. For what it's worth, we haven't gotten any calls on it yet since it's been, so it's not like it's a frequently used in existing number. It was just transferred over. You know, the good thing about having it staffed by people and people who work at the House is we'll be able to, I mean, I get wrong numbers all the time on my other line for things that it used to be or people that it used to be, and it's pretty easy to direct someone. But I can look into it and get back to you, absolutely.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Weeks, it's not necessary. I just raise that as a question because numbers change, people change, staff changes, and we've all had the opportunity to call a number we thought we were going to talk to somebody or get a different person on the other end or party on the other end. And it's like, oh, well, no, this has been reassigned, and it's just catching up with that legacy stuff is what I'm looking at.
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just wondering, Mr. Weeks, you mentioned that one thing you thought moving forward that we should think about is how to define legislative business, that you think it should have something of an expansive definition. I guess I'm inclined to agree, especially because the, you know, when asked, there was the survey showed that, you know, the top answer I know for where the sexually harassing behavior takes place was off-premises events. So, I mean, the survey didn't ask for any elaboration on what they mean by off-premise events, but to me that means that your statement that we should have an expansive view of what constitutes legislative business is a correct one. Are there any, I guess a couple questions, are there any plans for a follow-up survey that could maybe get some more detail like on that type of question, just where, what type of event it was, where the behavior occurred, just so we, so that it can inform our definition, any future definition we, change we might make to that?
Mr. Weeks?
Madam Chair, Representative Freiberg, there currently aren't any concrete plans, other than I think our general recommendation that we do a survey once a year, because the main use of a survey is as a benchmark that you can measure progress or change over time. I know when Ms. Pera was doing her research in Colorado, they hired outside consultants, and one of the things those consultants did was focus groups, voluntary focus groups of legislative staff and legislative community members, and that was a good way to tease out things like that, I think anecdotally. You know, I think we have an idea of the kind of events these are through anecdote and news media and just hearing the way things happen. And one point to that kind of broader issue is if the shared goal is eliminating harassment and discrimination from the legislature, people are best served by having as many partners in this as we possibly can. Obvious two would be the Senate and the LCC working together in this, the same direction. But lobbyist groups, public interest groups, other groups, you know, to the degree these things are on the margins of what might be legislative business, it sure would be nice if there was someone to carry the weight on the other side of that margin, right? So that our staff, our members feel safe everywhere around the Capitol and whenever they're doing their work around the Capitol and around the state.
Representative Freiberg? Okay. Thank you. Members, any other questions, concerns? Well, and we didn't hear from Representative Schultz, did we? She must be busy. Anyway, well, I guess then that's our business. So I want to extend, first of all, a special thank you to the nonpartisan staff for their outstanding work, and we're so grateful that for all the time and effort you've put into this project, both last session and during interim. Specifically, I want to thank Mr. Ben Weeks and Ms. Christina Pera. Also, Mary Mullen, she's not here, is she? And Pat McCormick. Mr. McCormick, thank you. And Ms. Kelly Knight, thank you very much for your work. I appreciate all the time that we've spent on this. I would expect that we will be having more conversations about this in the future. But I finally thank you all for being part of the task force, all the committee members, and look forward to bipartisan effort in continuing to build the improvements that we made last session. And ultimately, we want the House to be safe and a respectful workplace environment for all of us. So thank you very much for coming. And with that, I guess we will adjourn.